The following is a North Carolina Baptist resource. For more, visit ncbaptist.org.
So we're going to talk a little bit today about several churches that have been strategically and faithfully engaging in multi-family housing communities and how they're trying to currently making disciples and some of the great things that's been happening, some of the pitfalls that they've seen, so that we can learn how to better engage our communities for Christ. One of the big things I want you guys to kind of know just in general about our team is that we focus primarily, like I said, on multi-housing, which is basically apartment communities, townhomes, trailer park communities, these particular areas, which for us and just generally nationwide have about a 95% rate of lostness within these communities. Now you think about that, that is crazy to think that there are so many communities within our nation and particularly right in our own state that have no real gospel representation there. And so our team was put together to try to impact this in a strategic way where we could literally see these communities come to know Jesus Christ, not only come to know him, but also make disciples that make disciples to be sent out to reach other communities as well. So our panel here will be kind of telling us a little bit about their story and how they came into grips with it. One primary way that we have been able to talk about this is through what we call our people plan. And so the people plan is a way that we think about engaging. We don't think that it's the only way to engage communities, but we think it's a great strategic way to think about engagement long term. The first thing that we want to do when we're engaging communities is to pray fervently. So we want to pray and ask God what he would like us to do within the communities rather than kind of just deciding what we think is best. The other thing that we want to do is make sure that we're actually engaging people within that community and just getting to know folks so we can know how to best serve them. We want to make sure that we're trying to open up the word with them and actually building relationships that's not just based on who we know and what we know, but truly about Jesus Christ. And then we also want to prepare key leaders to be able to launch a sustainable ministry that is going to really be a baseline within that community so that it's not just focused on us and what we can do, but it's actually building a great community dynamic. And once we do that, we want to exit with care where the community can be self-sustaining and not just relying on us. So our panel here will kind of tell us a little bit about their story as they've engaged. Jeff Salisbury is a pastor at Bayleaf Baptist in Raleigh, North Carolina. We have Pastor Bernard Neal with Discipleship Community Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. We also have Justin Bolden right here with Reconciled Church, Charlotte, North Carolina. We also have Jason Ledford with Tapestry Church in Winston-Salem. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Justin, and we're going to let Justin tell a little bit about his story and how he got connected with multifamily, multi-housing, and just talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, my name is Justin Bolden, pastor of church plant in Charlotte, Reconciled Church. I actually started out in multifamily housing ministry before I came to Charlotte. I was interning at a church in Houston, Texas for a year and a half. And the primary location of my ministry was in a place called CUNY Homes in Third Ward, Houston, Texas, which is one of the largest public housing places in the city. And so I spent a year and a half doing ministry there. And so it was something kind of near and dear to my heart. And then as we moved into Charlotte, I got connected with members of the multifamily housing team. And, yeah, you hear that statistic, 95% lostness in these places. And having witnessed that myself, just knowing the need, and then in Charlotte, especially the way it's growing, there's, I mean, tons of multifamily housing places there already, as well as new ones being built. And so we came in as a church that was focused on building, planting as a missional community. And so the idea kind of stuck with me. I heard early on in my pastoral ministry, I think it was Francis Chan that actually asked the question, but if you were starting a church and all you had was this book and you held the Bible up, he's like, would the church you're a part of look like what you read in here? And so that's just always kind of stuck with me from the get-go. And so we had that kind of mentality. What would it look like to become part of our community and to neighbor well and to love people to the cross? And so that was the, I guess, strategy, if you will, coming into Charlotte. And so part of our team, our core team, we've actually seeing them take that same mentality. We have one couple that's a part of our core team who are members of Apartment Life Ministry, if you're familiar with that. And so they're literally placed in an apartment community with the specific intention of building community there for the apartment community. So we have one couple doing that. And then my daughter and son-in-law actually just recently moved into an apartment complex. So they're becoming incarnational in that apartment community with the idea of down the road starting their own missional community within that community of people. And so I would say that's probably how I have been connected with the multifamily housing ministry and our church.
My name is Jason Ledford, Pastor Tapestry Church in Winston-Salem. We've been around as a church for about 3 or 4 years. We planted in a pocket of lostness identified by the state convention, a very diverse neighborhood and community. And we're going to labor there and serve there primarily through the school. So that's where we meet for worship, and we were trying to engage the school. And not to give a long story, our first couple of years we had a lot of inexplicable tragedy as a church, and so a lot of our community engagement was muted. We were trying to love and serve each other really well. Nothing about our first couple of years was normal. And so all the things you plant to try to do in the community, we just couldn't because we had so much grief and loss and sorrow as a congregation. So on the other side of that, when we got to 2018, we really wanted to take some of the brokenness and difficulties God has walked us through and figure out how to turn that outward and how we take what God has walked us through to engage the community with the gospel. And so as we began to look at kind of where God had placed us, we went back to our demographics that we had for a couple of years and realized within about 2 miles of where we were, there were about 13 multifamily housing units. The community we're in is about 80% lost, and the majority of them clearly would be in those units. Tons of apartments, every variety. And so we're going to think about how do we begin to engage lostness. We'd been doing stuff at the school, had a little bit of traction, but not a lot, but we had not done anything specific in the community. And so Joe's my brother-in-law, so that's helpful. And so I called him up and said, hey, we need some insight. We want to begin to engage some of these apartment complexes. We can't take them all on, but we've got two or three families in different ones. So what might we begin to do to begin to just get our foot in the door? The school's been great. We serve there consistently and tutor and do all kinds of events there with them, but we want to do something outside of the school. And so this summer, we had a couple families that lived in one of the specific apartment complexes. And so we said we're just going to plan two events over the summer and do a cookout. Out kind of a block party two different times and just see what happens. And as it usually goes, you have great plans, and both days the weather was terrible, like thunderstorms raging within about, I mean, at go time we thought we might as well just cancel both of these because this is not going to be worth it. And we persevered. The Lord held the rain off, and for about 2 hours both events we probably had between 30 and 40 folks come out, which I thought, man, that's not a lot of people. And what I realized after the second event is the same people came. And what God did through that, our desire was never to put butts in our seat on worship. Our goal was to build a relationship with the people that live there so they could build a relationship with the people that live around them. And so how God has been very good in that and faithful is that almost all the folks we engaged for those two events have come consistently to one of our missional communities. Relationships are being built. One of the ladies told us last week that she hated not to be there because she's found some community in this missional community that she's been coming to. And some of them have come to worship, and that's been great, but that's not been our goal. And so really, we're on the beginning stages of this. We realize this is a massive harvest opportunity for us, and we just want to be faithful there. And so this is not directed through that, but we got an opportunity this past Wednesday on Halloween night to partner in our community at the shelter across the street from where we worship at the community center and do this kind of a community festival. And we advertised that a lot through the apartment complexes where we had served. And, you know, when you had 30 or 40 come to the two things, you think, well, we'll get about 100 hot dogs, we're good to go. And about 300 people came. And so we got about 60 contact cards, and my guess is majority of those are going to be in apartment complexes. And so I think God is going to give us a bigger picture of who people are, where they are, so that we begin to figure out where our people are already located and begin to engage us with some relationships. And our desire is to plant a missional community in January 2019 in the community where we've been serving, because up to this point we just haven't been able to. So hopefully this gives us some traction to begin to do that in 2019, and hopefully we'll multiply that by the end of the year.
Bernard Neal, and I am the pastor of Discipleship Community Church. We are a little different than most. We actually ended up planning in a housing authority project. And I didn't live there, but my mother did. And she had a very good relationship with the folk there. Of course, she's gone on to be with the Lord now, praise her soul. But by the same token, we were able to actually go into the community and actually bring something that was never there. Of people that never went to church, anyone that was that was looking to do something different. The main goal when we got there was a need. And it was the need in this community is not the same as a need even across the street. So one of the key things that we wanted to do was talk to the people. Too many times, you know, we have this thing in mind. I hear people say, let's pray and ask God what to do. But if, you know, if you're pushing God out front as a problem, God needs to push you out front. You know, he's behind you. He's pushing you. He's leading you towards those people that are hurt. And a lot of things that happen there is, you know, you go into a community like this and trust is a big thing. You know, they must trust you. You must get to know them. And one of the most beautiful parts about this is, you know, when we read the Bible in John, it talks about Jesus must need go through Samaria. You know, too many times we will go the long way around to avoid an unlovely place. And it's that unlovely place that there's some jewels up in there. There's a diamond just waiting to be rubbed and made into a ruby, you know, or whatever you want to make it into. But the beautiful thing is we hear so many times that, you know, let's do something about the prisons. Let's do something about this. But if you don't catch a person in their need, in their wheelhouse, how can you say God love them? When my car's broke down, I can't find anybody to help me get it fixed. You know, we're in a community where the average household income is $13,000 a year. A year. But when we got there, I will say when we first got there, you know, it's hard to judge, but we use different measures to judge things. Folk, all of a sudden, if we got 30 people, we take up 25 envelopes. Now, it may not be but a dollar in there. But when $13,000 is all you get and half of that is your rent and you don't have a car and you're riding a bus. So our whole goal was Matthew's 28 said, go ye therefore.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. It doesn't say bring them to us.
Right.
We need to go to them. And we go to them with the love of Jesus. He went places that nobody else wanted to go. And if we go to some of those places, we can see so many things changing. And that's what happens in the communities, you know. But I caution us to say, don't get caught up in, because what you're doing in your community is great, but it may not work in mine. Mm-hmm. I have to really be focused on what the needs are in the community in which I serve. Mm-hmm. And if I can do that and do it with the love of Jesus, we can combine some folk. I'll give you an idea. We had a young lady. 2.5 years we've been after her. Crack, everything. She came to church Sunday as sober as all get out. 6 months ago, she came with a beer in her hand. And at the end of service, she walked up and gave her life to Christ. Oh, y'all need to give a hand clap. Don't sit in here and act like you ain't Baptist preachers. No. But that's the kind of thing that you'll find. And everybody always say, Lord, if I could just save one. Got to go where that one needs to be saved.
Yeah. So I'm Jeff Salisbury. Raleigh's home for me is a city in which I was born in, and I represent Bayleaf Baptist Church, which is a 130-year-old church. We're located on the corner of Union Church Road and Possum Track Road. So if you think about Raleigh, you're probably not thinking Possum Track Road is a popular popular road in our city. So we're a rural church that the suburbs have grown into. So in our congregation, we have people that grew up farming that land, but we also have RTP executives. So what I mean by that is RTP is the Research Triangle Park, which is outside of Raleigh, between Raleigh and Durham. And it's a place with IBM, Glaxo, large multinational corporations. So our context in our church is a bit diverse when it comes to socioeconomic because of the way that the city has grown up around it. However, we recognize we're a majority culture church. You know, we probably have 95+% white population in our congregation, but we are looking for ways to engage our culture. So I'm a little bit different from the context. We're not a church plant. We're also not a church that's established in the inner city, but we're a majority culture church on the outside looking for ways to send our people into the community, recognizing that there are needs in multi-housing complexes. So the short of the story is I lived in one for a while, and just in my stairwell, there was a lady from Honduras, there was a lady from Zimbabwe, there was a family from India, and then there was a lady that was from Miami via Central America. And so it was a very diverse stairwell that I lived on and felt the calling to go and make disciples. We began prayer walking a variety of neighborhoods because there's many around us. In fact, when we bought our first home, my wife and I, after we moved out of the apartment complex, my in-laws were looking at it, saying, "You're completely surrounded by multi-housing complexes." And he was curious, as any father-in-law might be, about the property values. Like, where are you buying? Are you buying in a good place? That was his concern. But as we're looking at the community, we're looking for ways to engage our neighbors. We began prayer walking all around our neighborhood and asking God to lead us to a place. We settled in a neighborhood. It's called Hawthorne. It used to be called the Lakes. It's been passed down through others that have purchased it, other management companies. But in the context where we're trying to establish relationships, there is about a third immigrant population from Africa, a lot of African nations, from Central Asia, so Iraq, Turkey, Pakistan, so a number of folks, and then also India. And then we have a number of Spanish-speaking immigrants that also live in the community. That's about a third of 660 units are international. And then a third, I would say, are low-income white, either widows or students, like technical college students. And then a third, everything else. It's really diverse neighborhood. And so we began about 6 years ago trying to figure out how to engage. We started very similarly with a couple of events. What can we do to bless the community with some events? Talked to the property management. They liked the idea. Now we have two families that live in the community. We do after-school programs. We have ESL programs. We have U.S. citizenship class programs, jobs programs. We do community Bible studies in apartments there on the property. And I would classify those ministries all as bread and fish ministries. We're looking for ways to meet the needs of the community. All of our ideas initially very paternalistic, outsiders coming in, providing what we thought the community needed. The Lord's convicted us, and so we're looking to raise up local leaders because the resources are actually already in the community, so we need to empower them and to learn from them and to equip them, support them. And so God's grace has allowed us to do some of that. And we're about a year into establishing a non-majority church plant in the community, because 6 years ago our desire all along was to make disciples and see them ultimately come involved in a healthy church. What we have learned is even though we're only 5 miles away from this community, people came, but they didn't last. And mostly that was because of cultural barriers. And the culture barrier primarily is not music, which, you know, one might think, or even money. The primary culture barrier is how one would classify community. For me, community is a 2-hour Bible study, you know, in my home once a week, and we get together on Wednesday nights and Sunday mornings. But then when the time comes, I'm going home and we're going to be with my family. But for a lot of those people coming from non-majority culture environments, community never stops. You eat together, you cook together, you sleep together. I mean, you're in environments where you're immersed in life together. And so people were lonely coming to our church. Small group once a week wasn't cutting it. And so we've now established a non-majority culture church plant in the community where we're trying to meet the need. We have a local person from the community that we've discipled to raise up as pastor over that church plant in the community.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. So I would want to ask these three guys here. I know Pastor Jeff already kind of talked a little bit about some of the barriers. But what would you say are some of the cultural differences and barriers that you've had to overcome as you've looked to reach people in multi-housing communities?
The community that we're in is really highly diverse, at least for Winston-Salem. We're in a pocket of lostness. The elementary school has over 30 languages, over 50 nationalities. And to be honest, when we planted, we had a field of dreams mentality. We're going to show up, give the gospel, and people are just going to come. And that has not happened as much as I wanted to. And as I said, God had to really walk us through a lot of refining, I think, and brokenness. But the gospel transforms all those barriers. But we realize you can't bite that whole elephant off at one time. And so what we begin to realize is the way we can engage these different cultures and the diversity in our community is to find out where they live and then figure out how we can engage there effectively. And so where do we already have people from our church living? We've had a couple families move into the South Fork community where we are and take up residence. And so really we're just trying to even learn now, because I think we thought through the school would be a natural end, and when you go and serve the school, it's like the United Nations, and it's this picture of heaven, and you want it so bad. This past Wednesday, we had these hundreds of people come to a Halloween event. You're like, man, this is what we want God to give us, but we realize they're not just going to show, because zero people came from Wednesday to Sunday, like zero. And I told our folks on Sunday, that's not a waste. We're investing in relationships and in people, and they actually know we exist, which is better than before. And now we have an opportunity to follow up where they live, work, and play to engage them with the gospel. Even if it never translates to them coming to us, we want them to find out about who Jesus is, for discipleship to occur where they are. And so we have a lot of cultural barriers. There's lots of language barriers. And so we're just trying to take it chunk by chunk where people live and just believe it through those smaller relationships, being in each of those homes, that some of those barriers can be broken down more than you can just having somebody come to a worship service. And so we're just trying to have a realistic expectation, take it slow this year, and just see what the Lord does.
And yeah, I would say for us in Charlotte, one of the biggest cultural barriers we faced was we moved, our family moved into a community that's predominantly African American, and so if you're familiar with the term gentrification, there's a kind of a tepid kind of hands to the, you know, all of a sudden, there's these young white people moving into the block, you know, and there's this kind of hesitation to really, you know, what when you go to them and say, like, you know, we're interested in getting to know you, to build relationships with you, there's this kind of this like, yeah, we'll wait and see. And so, honestly, we've been there for a year and a half, and it's been a lot of hard work and just trying to cultivate relationships with our neighbors. And honestly, it's actually taken some pretty tragic events to help build those. And God has opened doors for us to love people well in those moments. And, you know, the walls start to come down. So I think with anything you have to, it's that old saying, nobody cares what you know till they know that you care. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to take a day by day demonstration of that, I think. And I think for us, that was the biggest cultural barrier where we're at.
For us, coming into the community, it's the same thing. I mean, you know, hey, you're not necessarily from here. Hold on. You're coming in and you're an outsider. You know, the blessing is I grew up in public housing in Charlotte, so I understand the culture. But so many times we literally had so many dialogue with the community long before anything ever happened as far as a church being planted. The biggest thing that we ran into is trust. People don't want to know, you know, you come and you tell them all these things. They get churches and people to come through these communities on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. They come in, they drop off a little something, and they're gone. Mm-hmm. It's bye-bye. So, you know, you have to be patient and just kind of buy your time. And it's how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Going to take a whole lot of bites, but one bite at a time. And when you've got to earn the trust, and if you want to empower people, you got to first find out what it is that they need to be empowered. I think a lot of times we have this dream of what we think it ought to be, and we want to run in and save the world. But, you know, if I need water and you bringing me hot chocolate, it don't work. I mean, the bottom line is, so that was a culture problem with us. And one of the things that we discovered, my wife and I both would be in that community. I literally would be there at 2 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock in the morning talking and standing out there. The first house I got familiar with was a drug house. I understand where I'm at. I think too many times we don't necessarily go in and we don't understand the culture, so it's kind of difficult. You got to understand the culture. That's one of the biggest things you've got to face. Understand who you're dealing with. Accept it. Don't
explain why that's a strategic partnership, though. First of all, I'm a
narrative. Right.
So tell them where your worship gathering is, if you don't mind.
No, I was getting ready to go into that. Yeah, because what makes this neat is they had resources there, but they wasn't being connected with the resources. Like, for instance, we meet in the community center, which is really the computer room, which is really everything in the community, but wasn't being used. They had nobody to help them. They didn't want the kids to go use the computer because they might break them, you know, so they were just sitting there. You know, we had a kitchen in use, and you got young women and kids that don't know how to cook, but let's face it, they're home by themselves. So, you know, what we did is bring the resources together. That was a challenge because, you know, we had a person that didn't agree. Everybody's not going to agree in the neighborhood. But if you stay the course, mm-hmm. and if you just hold on to the unchanging hand of God, He will change them. Don't you try. Mm-hmm. Because we literally got locked out. That's how Brian and I hooked up. We literally got locked out of the building because of some
people that wasn't quite on board. But through prayer and talking, and now they're our biggest supporter. If we need something, they're on it. And so we went back and we had to backtrack and go back and do it the right way. That's why we now have a partnership with the Housing Authority, so everybody knows we're there. They know what we're doing. We pass out flyers, even though people say you can't, you know, yeah, we're a church. We don't pass
out. Well, the kids pass out flyers. he gets away with things because the kids from the community are serving the community. It's different than if somebody
find out where you can get, you know, what you can do. Mm-hmm. And work within it, you know, so it works out well. But it's still a challenge no matter what the color you are. I think more than anything, a person needs to know that you're there and you're real. Mm-hmm. You know, too many times it's all this falseness that we deal with. You know, when we look in the Word, that's what we're dealing with, all the falsehood.
Well, I don't mean to speak for you, but the drug house is important because they believe that Pastor Bernard and his team are there for the good of the community. And so even though they might be seen as outside the law, they also are a protective force for the community. Lord. So they see him and they say, hey, wait a second, these people are safe. And so now they're behind him and people feel free to come. And we talk about people of peace. It's weird for you to think of the drug house as partially an advocate, as a person of peace or a house of peace for the community, but in his context, it absolutely is the case.
One of our biggest supporters is amazing. You know, it's amazing, and the lives that have been changed. When we first got there, it sits right in front of the community. And so you couldn't have church without them, you know, with the deals. They shut it down now. They shut it down during service, believe it or not. So it's nothing but God.
Mm-hmm. So I want to kind of piggyback off of what Pastor Bernard was talking about, and for everyone, if you would just quickly talk about this. But what do you find is the importance of prayer in engaging these communities for you and your churches? What would you find is the importance of prayer in your engagement of these communities and churches? You can go ahead and start, Pastor Jeff.
As I was saying earlier in our own story, my wife and I, we just began prayer walking out of the neighborhoods. And I'll be honest with you, the first time prayer walking, we're walking down the street, and you know when you're praying, you don't know where the Lord's going to lead you and what kind of conversations He's going to guide you to. But as we're walking down the street, there's this souped-up Escalade, you know, that's got the spinners, and it's jamming to some music. And then I've got my newborn baby girl there, and I'm with my wife, and I'm just being honest about it's outside my comfort zone, my context. But I knew as I'm walking down the street that it would send a message if I crossed the street. So I said, Lord, this is unfamiliar to me. This is uncomfortable for me, but I'm going to stay on this side of the street. And as we approach these guys, they're talking about the penitentiary. I mean, it's what they're talking about. But we're prayer walking the community, and it allowed us to engage even in these cursory conversations at the beginning to build, you know, to be familiar in the community. But everything that we do is established by prayer. I mean, what we're seeing now is the fruit of prayer. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, people come up to us now when we're doing something, and they'll say, you know, this was on the prayer. The thing is that. It's so easy in our flesh to presume that we are the hero to the story. You know, we're going to enter into the scene, and we're going to bring it, and God's going to use us to be the hero. And we always find out that He has always been there, and He is ahead of us, and He is doing that work. And then we show up, you know, kind of following the pushing. The pastor mentioned here, you know, when we show up, and it's like the Lord humbles us to have eyes to see that any fruit that we experience is the work of His Spirit that has gone before us, and then the prayers that we pray. But I'll be honest, there are still really hard days. You know, I was telling KO earlier, last week was a really hard week for us because we had three people that we've been ministering to coming into the church, two of them been baptized. They walked away sad. You know what I mean? They encountered the risen Lord. And then post-baptism, they said, this is too much for me. And they went back to their previous life. One to a life of alcoholism. One to a life of selling, you know, selling yourself. And so it's crazy to walk down that journey, invest in someone, see their testimony come to bear, baptize them, see them beginning to walk, and then see the world come to try to snatch that fruit away. And so it's just a reminder that even even the stories, I wanted to come here today to champion and say, hey, you go do this work and the Lord's going to give you opportunity to have this kind of fruit. It reminds us the task is not done. It is still sown in prayer. Like, we still fight for these individuals in prayer because the battle is not a spiritual one. You know, 1 Corinthians, where it talks about, or 2 Corinthians, where it talks about, you know, the battle, the weapons of our warfare are not flesh and blood. But you understand what I'm trying to say.
It's not just one, it is a spiritual one.
Right. We're not at war against flesh and blood, but against things unseen. But the weapons of our warfare are mighty in God for tearing down these strongholds. And so that's where the battle of won and lost is on in prayer.
Yeah, I would just say for me, prayer is our first line of defense. But it's also, I think, anytime you're coming into a community, I feel like prayer is the way you can get your heart aligned with the Lord and have like that burden for the people. Because what you're entering into is not, going to be this nice cookie cutter 12-month program. And you're going to see it's going to be in some cases, lifetime of investment. And I don't think anybody invests their life into something they don't have a burden for. And so I feel like God's put us in places, and prayer helps align us with Him to see the people in front of us the way He sees them. And just like Pastor Jeff was saying, what's it going to look like? How much perseverance is going to take to keep going after those people that walk away? Because that's what we've been called to do. And so I think without prayer, it's impossible.
I'm going to be the honest, transparent pastor. We did a lot of stuff in our own strength for a long time. Mm-hmm. And a number of months ago, we just thought, this is not working so great. It's not that we don't pray, we just were not being intentional. And I think the last number of months, we started to be more intentional. God's just been cracking my other head left and right about prayer in my own life and leading our people. And prayer's not a magic bullet. It's not, well, I pray and you do because you have to do what I say. It's prayerlessness is a sin, and not taking things to the Lord or saying, I don't need you. And so we've just been more convicted lately as a body. Me personally, the scripture is very clear. You have not because you ask not. And so we're broken for our community. We're burdened for the people that are there. And I know we're praying for them, but we have beginning to make a more intentional step towards praying for them collectively, and being just intentional in how we go about that. Because personally, that was just a conviction for me. We were trying to do a lot of activity, but I think we were trying to put the cart before the horse. And I'm just being honest. I mean, you can get a lot of stuff done and appear to be productive, but a lot of that is just manufactured. And so we're trying to take a couple steps back and say, we need to really bathe this in prayer and bathe these communities in prayer, and trust the Lord to do something here that we cannot do on our own. And so God's done a lot of humbling of us, humbling me personally, about just my own prayer life and how I pray for the folks that I'm leading and praying for this community. And so that's just being honest. Like, you can accomplish a lot of, like you've talked about in the pastor's conference, you do a lot of stuff in your own strength, and it has the appearance of activity, but we're really trying to say, Lord, we want to give this to you and just trust that you can do far more than what we can ask or imagine. So,
one, a prayer that we pray a lot as we walk through the community is understanding the Lord is jealous for worship. And recognizing that in these communities, just like in our own neighborhoods, this is true across our cities, but there's a lot of idolatry going on. So when we walk through the community, we're praying for the glory of God to be made known in the community, that He would reclaim for Him that is the worship due His name. That we say, Lord, people are worshiping vain idols, and we know that You're jealous. And so our prayer is not for our own glory, for the kingdom that we're trying to build in this community. Our pursuit that humbles us is that we're after Your glory in this community. So would You use our witness to turn people's hearts away from their idols to You, so that Your glory be made known in this community. That's one thing I want to say. The second thing I want to say is it always begins with general prayers. When you begin to get started, you're praying for that community. And then you're walking in the community, you're praying for this community. Maybe by name, but as you go, then you're beginning to pray for Rihanna and for rehab, and then you're beginning to pray for Jose, and you're beginning to pray for their kids, Carnica, and you can begin to pray for Carletta, and all of a sudden, then now there's people, and as you begin to pray for people, it's not just this general community that you're praying for, but then your heart gets tied to the well-being and the flourishing of these individuals, because you're taking them by name before the throne of grace. And so that movement from general prayer to specific prayer is what ties our heart in. I think what was said down here, it ties our heart in and makes it more personal. We're invested. We're there because of the throne.
I need some simple names to pray for, like Johnny and Beth. I'm going to remember some of those. But the thing about prayer, and I have to sort of like you, the prayer was a lot for me. Because I'm going to be honest, you know, I was like, Lord, why did you put me here? You know, of all places you could have placed me, why did you place me here? You know, and so I was not prepared for that. I did not want to be there. And it with the prayer for me showed me what God would have me to do. And at that particular point, it was eye-opening. And the prayer does definitely change things, but more than anything, when you go down on your knees, if your glass was at the halfway point, when you get up, it's still at the halfway point. The difference is you're going to see it a little differently. Mm-hmm. When you went down on your knees, it was half empty. When you got up, it was half full. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of it changes the way you see things. And one of the things we do with prayer that we love doing is we pray very openly with each individual. So we knock on your door, can I pray for you? Say anything you need prayer for. And especially if they're out in the opening, we want people to see us praying and praising God. It makes a difference. Don't do it in secret.
That's right.
And so we pray openly. And what it also does, it allows them, because we just ask, what would you like prayer for? Mm-hmm. We pray, and you wouldn't believe how many times they come to church out of the blue and go, hey, Pastor, God answered that prayer. You know, so you're actually empowering them to understand that there is power in prayer.
Yeah. All right, so before I go ahead and start to open it up to anyone in the audience, for the folks that are here, even if this is something that they can take away to their pastors or ministry leaders, or if they are a ministry leader, what is one practical thing that you would want to let our churches know about multi-housing ministry? Like, what is one practical takeaway that you would like our churches and our associations to know about multi-housing ministry?
It's a generational pursuit. This is not a short-term deal. This is a long-term deal. And what's hard about it is there's a lot of turnover in multi-housing complexes. But you can't have a short-term view about it. You know, there are some things you plant in the ground, like weeds in your yard, that come up like that. And there's other things that take a long time to cultivate. I learned this. My favorite fruit is kiwi. It takes 7 years to get a kiwi branch to bear fruit. I didn't know if you knew that. So this is a work that takes a really long time to bear fruit. And so it's not a short-term deal. It's a long-term deal. But the reward is in the kingdom. I like that.
That's good.
Mine's real short. Just have realistic expectations.
Yeah.
And I didn't share this earlier, but the very first thing, and this is why it's so important for us as a church to go to where people are, almost all the kids at the school where we are serving and worshiping are on free or reduced lunch. So hunger's a need. They get backpacks for the weekend. When we first started, man, we were gung-ho, and there was a day that they were out of school, and we said we were going to set up an opportunity to feed these kids. We used a local Methodist church and said, hey, can we use your thing? And we publicized. We had all this food, and one family came. And we thought, what are we doing? And then we realized, we assessed the need, but they can't get to us. Mom and Dad weren't home. They couldn't. And we thought, the idea was great. Our expectation was way higher than what it should have been in that situation. But we also were trying to meet a need in the wrong place. And so just an expectation of knowing the needs of the community, understand how you begin to meet those needs, and realize there's a lot of trial and error. And so not everything's going to work. Like you said, what we work in Charlotte is not going to work in the community that I'm in. And so understanding the culture of where you are and having a realistic expectation and just be willing to have some trial and error as you try to figure out the rhythms of that community and engaging there in a way that most honors the Lord. So,
I would say just remember to honestly care about what it is that you're doing. Don't go halfway. If you're not, the biggest thing is everybody have great ideas, but it's the follow through.
Yeah.
And we got to follow through. God didn't bring us and leave us. Why would we do it to someone else? But just remember that
you know, it's the empowering of the people that makes so much difference. If you're going to go into a community, help them to empower. But the way you do that is you've got to know what your focus is. We know our core focus, and if it doesn't meet it, we can't do it. You can't do everything. Understand what it is you can do, what it is you do well, and does that, and make sure it pairs up with the needs of the community in which you're trying to serve. And then from that particular point, you've got to also get them involved, because they got to trust you. They got to feel that you're real. If they don't feel you're real, it doesn't really matter what the color of the community or whatever. They got to feel that you're real. They're about, you know.
What's the fastest way to make people feel that you're real?
What's the fastest way to make them feel that you're real?
There's no fast way.
Be real, right?
Be very real. But the thing that we do that we love doing is we love on the people. Don't separate yourself. That's what I can say, the biggest thing. Do not put yourself separate from them. If they in this circle and they're dirty, you go in the circle and they're dirty. But I got on my nice suit. I'm always in a suit, am I, Brian?
That's true.
No.
We get a lot of suits dirty, though.
I get a lot of suits dirty because I'm a love on them regardless. And it blows their mind that I would give them a hug and they got oil all over them and I'm in a suit. You know, and it changes the concept. Mm-hmm.
He's not always in a suit either.
Oh, go ahead. Under promise, over deliver.
Yes. I like that. So before I open it up, and kind of going back to something that the guy said, an idea that I like to have when it comes to doing multi-housing ministry or any long-term ministry is just the idea of relationship, right? So if you have a wife or a loved one that has a birthday, just think about it. If you only spent time with your wife on your anniversary, you would probably have a problem, right? It's like just showing up on an anniversary, just showing up on a birthday, just showing up on Christmas isn't the way to have a sustainable relationship. It's the kind of in and out, the being there when things happen, the being there when things are happy, being there when things are sad, that really creates authentic relationships. And I think if we think about that in terms of the ministries that we do, we'll be in a better place than just thinking in terms of just that Thanksgiving drive. And that's really what we're going for when we're talking about multi-housing ministry, right? The long-term engagement, the long-term thinking of strategy to really support relationship building that's really going to foster discipleship. Because discipleship doesn't happen during just a church service. It happens in the in and out, in the day-to-day of figuring out what it looks like to live and look more like Jesus. And so that's what we're about. Whether that's in communities that a lot of our guys are talking about that are low income, or just your conventional apartment communities that you have, or even your high rise, I mean, look like you're almost living in a hotel type communities, what we would call A and B communities. Really want to see an impactful discipleship made in these communities where folks aren't seeing the hope of the gospel at this point. So yeah, I want to open it up for questions for you guys. We have about 10 minutes, so feel free.
One of the first things you typically see in these multi-family environments are the big, glaring, no solicitation signs. Mm-hmm. That tend to intimidate a lot of church groups, you know, because they feel like they're doing something illegal if they go in and begin to try to approach people. And sometimes there's even resistance from residents that reminds you, hey, look, you're not supposed to be solicited. Well, what do you all recommend as a way to respect that, but yet at the same time, make yourself available to the people there?
Gotcha. So I'm just going to repeat that so we can catch that. So, guys, if y'all can talk about how you deal with no solicitation or fair housing, as we would call it, how are some ways that you guys have dealt with that in your communities? And if I can get one or two.
Positive relationship with the property manager. Yeah. So you lose trust if you go in and ignore the signs.
Right.
You gain trust if you pursue the one who is the authority over that sign. And when you posture yourself in the right way. And then the second thing is the idea that it's really hard to engage in these communities as a commuter. And so over time, the long-term goal is either a person of peace in the community that you're investing in to empower them as a leader in that community, or to move in yourself as a cross-cultural missionary, maybe not cross-cultural, but as a missionary in the community. And then once you're a part of the community, then the no soliciting is different because you're not an outsider, right. You're one in the community.
Right.
So those are probably the two pathways I would say.
Okay. Thank you.
There's a phenomenon with the missionaries that I was raised, I was not raised Southern Baptist, I was raised Independent Baptist, and we had lots of missionaries from the South Pacific that would come to America and raise American dollars to go back and reach their people. And invariably, the fact that they were funded by Americans put them way above the lifestyle that a church of moderate size should be able to support their pastor. It stunted their giving, it stunted their desire to give, but I'm not sure it accomplished incarnational ministry like what I'm hearing here. I mean, we've even heard the possibility of living among them, but how does it affect them when they know that you have access to things they don't?
That's a great question.
So basically, how is ministry affected when the folks that you're serving know that you have access to things and maybe privileges that they don't have? I can get two to speak about this.
I mean, that's a great question. One of the things that when we look at the fact that, yeah, I have a little more than what you have, but am I willing to share it?
Okay.
Am I willing to truly give you some of what I have? I think what happens is when you go into a situation like that and you have a community that says, you know, hey, you got this nice house, you're living over here, you're doing this, you're doing that, but if all of a sudden you have something at your house and invite them, now I'm not telling you to go out and do that, you need to, you know, make sure you got control, but I have literally invited them to my home, which is away from the community, and instead of it looking at, look at what I have and you don't have, I show them where I was once, where they are, and how through God and through Christ you can be where I am. So I give you hope for your future. I think when we take it and we turn it into a hopeless situation, or look what I got, you'll never be here type of thing, or look, I was once where you are, and look what my love for God and how following Jesus have allowed me to be elevated to a different level. You know, and I think when you do that, and there's different ways of doing it, take them out, spend time with them, take them to your house, show them, but most of all, don't be afraid to share your story. If you know, especially if you've come up like them, you move into the community and become a part of them, that's great, but if you can't relate, that's kind of where they think you're up here and you're down there. So finding common ground and letting them know that, yes, you're here today, but your current circumstances does not project your future. You know, this is just a stepping stone to get to those greater points and you too be able to walk in the light.
And if I could also go into that, I think that another great way of looking at it is an idea that we call shadow pastoring. So I think having leaders and having connections and even people of peace in the community is a great way of kind of propping them up as folks that they can be a part of or that they already know, and letting them be able to encourage and bless people in a way that's going to actually lift up people within the community without necessarily putting all of the onus on yourself. So I think if you allow folks to have a certain level of leadership of those folks that already care for their community to be connected in a way where they can actually provide services, if someone maybe needs a bed or needs food or stuff like that, if you allow that person of peace or that leader that is already in the community to actually care for those needs, and you're able to provide resources for them to be able to do that, that's one great way of not necessarily coming in as the person that has to the have-nots and not starting that dichotomy, if that makes sense.
Can I would add to going back, I think, to having a true burden for the people. I think a lot of times what I've experienced is the biggest need that you usually encounter there is the need for relationship.
That's right. That's right.
You know, when you get into, you know, my personal story, like getting into a community where it's very low income, very similar to what Pastor Bernard's doing, they had access to resources. A lot of times what they needed was connection.
That's right.
Yes. Right. They needed, yeah, you know, it's, yeah. And I think, you know, one that always sticks out to me is I remember talking with a guy, older gentleman one time, and he was trying to figure out the bus schedule to get to this place in Texas called Taco Cabana that had a special on breakfast tacos. But he had to figure out the bus schedule to get there before they stopped serving breakfast and trying to see what time he had to, you know, it's something I've never thought about in my whole entire life, right? Like, I just hop in the car and I go get what I want. And so I think understanding and having a burden for relationship with people and being able to be a connection with them, I think is the greatest thing you can do. Once you do that, and then also like being open-handed, like understanding that everything we've been given has been given by God for His glory. And so
it's hard to weigh the balance, because the Lord has called us to generously give, but at the same time we're not to create dependency, and that's the hard tension that you walk. Because if you just go in there as the outsider with the resources and you create dependency, then you're stunting their long-term growth. And what you mentioned, even in these churches and in the environment that you're speaking of. And so there are times when the Lord prompts you by the Spirit to act in a generous and benevolent manner to help someone in their particular need. But there's other contexts, and the predominant one is we're trying to empower them for a long-term plan. So we never give benevolence in this community unless there is a pathway forward. Like if we know that the need next month is going to be the exact same as this month, we will not give. And so we're looking for pathways to empower them. So we have jobs programs in the community to help people. And it turns out the number one barrier that people have is relationships. My network is different than their network.
Yep.
And so the way that I'm primarily generous is not with financial resources, but invitation into my network of resources to empower them, because they actually have the skill set. So communicating, you have the ability, you have the gifts, you have the resources that you need. And so we affirm that in you, and we're going to help you exercise them. We're going to teach you how to use them. Ultimately, it's a longer-term goal. But the relationship, that's it.
Perfect example of that is how many people do you know in your church that own a lawn care business that has a good paying job, you know, $20 an hour? How many people do you think the average person in these communities, how many business owners do they know? You know, and so just connecting them to the business owners that you know can be a great step sometimes.
Yeah.
So in our case, we started there, but now we're also encouraging entrepreneurship in our community. Hey, you have a gift.
That's right.
So not only do I want you to come work for me, where the money that you make is ultimately for my business or my church member's business, but you have the gifts.
Yes.
So what can I do to give you a seed resource
Amen.
For you to start the business, and then you can employ your neighbors,
Amen.
And all of a sudden you see economic development come. And so John Perkins talks about the three R's: relocation, reconciliation, and redistribution.
Yep.
The redistribution is not as scary as it seems.
It's scary.
Right, I know. But what I'm saying with the redistribution is oftentimes it's a whole lot more about connecting to resources than it is freely giving of your own bank accounts, though it might be that.
And I don't want to miss – well, yeah, I just don't want to miss the point of that. That creates amazing gospel conversations.
That's right.
Because all of a sudden you're able to talk about the Imago Dei of each person and how
right.
you encounter people who may have been told over and over throughout their whole life by people who were supposed to love and care for them that they were not worth or, you know, less than. And then you get it gives you the opportunity to be like this is not
right.
because I have something you don't.
That's right.
You know, and it's a great gateway into that, because we're talking about ultimately making disciples,
right.
you know, and so that's how you get there, I think.
Well, I want to thank you guys for being a part of this breakout session.